Hour number two of The Drive underway. It's Fan Run Radio. Marcus Young is in. The top four at four brought to you this afternoon by the Tallytown Tonight event Tuesday next week at Rickard Ridge Barbecue. Looking forward to being back up there. All right, Marcus. Bear threw down the gauntlet at the end of hour number one. Are you prepared to step up and deliver a top four at four for the ages?
Yes, I am, Russell.
We'll see about that. We will see about that.
Well, thank you, Russell.
Go right ahead. You're welcome.
At number one, Tennessee baseball today as they will be taking on Charlotte at 6 p.m. Eastern time. You can catch the game on ESPNU and ESPN+.
Vols donning the dark mode uniforms. It's currently 87 degrees in Clemson, as it's, I believe, about 87 here in Knoxville. So very similar weather over there. It will be 85 degrees at first pitch, 6 p.m. Sunset at 8:39. So it'll be warm in those black uniforms. I feel like we always worry about this, Bear, and it doesn't matter. Remember the, it's going to be too hot to wear the smoky grays down at LSU.
Yeah, we did talk about that, didn't we? I definitely wouldn't wear blacks.
And we smashed them down there on the bayou.
Smashed!
We can smash Charlotte tonight.
At number two, Big 12 Commissioner Brett Yorkman says Friday that the conference has a, quote, plan when it comes to expansion. And while league leaders are satisfied with their current members, they continue to explore all options and considerations at this point in time. Source who participated in the meeting this week told ESPN there was no vote on membership, but there was a discussion about scenarios. As they lose teams, I guess they're hoping to fill those spots in soon.
I'm kind of looking forward to them being at 12 teams in, I guess, 2024. Whenever they add, it's BYU, Houston, Cincinnati, UCF.
Yeah, I think they're joining this year, actually. It's like a weird overlap
year. Yeah, it'll
year.
Be 16 yeah. teams for one
but,
year.
But they'll actually have 12 teams. They can live up to their name now.
I guess they would have 14
right now,
for this
yes.
one year.
Yes.
But it'll be interesting to see how that league looks, how it feels, how it operates, if we're still – really considering that a power conference once those changes take place.
At number three, NBA Commissioner Adam Silver indicated that he has reached a decision regarding the league's office's looming disciplinary action against Memphis Grizzlies star Ja Morant, but said he would wait until after the championship has been crowned in the finals to announce the punishment. The Grizzlies suspended Morant on May 14th pending league review after a video on social media circulated around the All-Star brandishing a firearm. The NBA suspended Morant for 8 games after a similar instance in March after Morant traveled to New York to meet with Silver and other league officials.
He's getting ready to get a very long vacation, it sounds like.
I mean, it's going to be heavy. If you're waiting until after the finals, if you don't want to announce
it now.
Think
they're going to do it for a whole year, man?
Probably. I mean, it's the fact that...
What the heck did they come across that nobody... what was his... Silver said the amount of stuff they found as they investigated it?
I don't know if I have the exact thing that he said there.
I don't know. I would say at least 50 games, it sounds like, and maybe an entire season.
What the hell do you do if you're Mem? It's your franchise.
Well, I also wonder if they don't sit him and the Grizzlies down and say, look, this is the last chance, man. If there's any more firearm stuff, if you post a picture of yourself with a BB gun, you're out of this league forever. We're giving you the Pete Rose treatment.
Not sure if you're aware of the, what's going on in everyday American society,
Yeah, it's just a bad look. It's so pathetic that it's come to this with him.
And finally, at number four, some MLB scoreboards for you today as we have some exciting games coming up. Today we have the Brewers and the Reds will be heading off at 5:10 to lead off today. The Athletics and the Marlins at 6:40. Later on, you have the Cardinals and the Pirates at 7:05. We have the Mets versus the Blue Jays at 7:10. And I don't see. Oh, there it is. The Braves and the Diamondbacks will be at 9:40.
Big series right there.
And the Yankees and Dodgers at 10:10.
Braves starting old Charlie Morton.
D-backs are sneaky good this
year. Yeah, they are. Been betting on them a lot. I'm tempted to bet on them.
You know, it's taken a couple of years of Tennessee being good at baseball to do it, but and it doesn't hurt. I don't know. Did you guys see Ben Joyce again?
Yeah. Putting down Altuve last night.
Altuve did not look look happy. See him shoot a look out there?
What the? Shades of Wild Thing Vaughn putting down Jack Parkman back in the day.
Yeah. And that's got to be a rough feeling for a guy like Altuve, have some kid. It's the second game in the
– think about how Joyce feels. You're watching that guy in high school, and now all of a sudden you're on the mound striking out Jose Altuve.
Yeah, he's
going to be wild.
Yeah, a man to be feared.
All right, thank you, Marcus. That is the Top 4 at 4. It's brought to you by Tally Tonight, the fundraiser for the Tallytown Festival, celebrating the Italian heritage of Campbell County, including food, music, and exhibits. That festival will be Saturday, July 28th from 1 to 9 p.m. in downtown La Follette. We're going to be at a fundraiser for the event coming up on Tuesday at Cove Lake State Park. I'm going to be broadcasting live from Record Ridge Barbecue, a business that's been very kind and supportive of us through many, many years now. And we're going to be up there on Tuesday doing the show from 3 until 6 p.m. And we'll help them shine a spotlight on this. We got a lot of listeners up in Campbell County and La Follette, that area, and we hope to see them. And hopefully those folks will turn out for the Tallytown Festival and celebrate up there. Should be a lot of fun. All right, setting up hour number two this afternoon. A couple lines available. We're talking Tennessee baseball tonight, a 6 p.m. first pitch, hopefully for the Volunteers. Looks like Clemson is pulling away. They've got the bases loaded in the bottom of the eighth, already up 8-5 on Lipscomb. But Lipscomb has given Clemson all they wanted and more this afternoon.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm interested to see how many pitchers Clemson's had to go through today. Since we've been sitting here, I've seen one change.
So they've saved their first baseman, who's a lefty. We're going to see a steady diet of lefties this weekend, it sounds like.
This entire postseason, huh?
We're just going to have to show we can hit them.
Yeah. It's a lot more than one. I'm looking right now. They're on their fourth guy.
Has Grice pitched today?
No.
Okay. Is it Grice or I thought it was Grice. I guess I'm wrong.
He's going to be pitching tomorrow if assuming they win and they play us. That's what it sounds like, is they're going to throw us against him. Going to have to hit.
Throw him against us.
We're going to have to hit these lefties, man. Said it in the intro. It's my third key to the game. Simo, Merritt, Inslee, our right-handers, are going to have to hit. If they have a bunch of offers out there, lose today, we're probably going home tomorrow. So put up or shut up.
They need to be showing a Huna, like old reruns of Kung Fu. Patience, Grasshopper. He's yet to meet a first pitch. He didn't want to.
He swings first pitch a lot, but when he's been patient before, and that's when he plays well. It's when he goes up there just hacking.
He's taking like those huge swings.
I don't know, man. I just wonder if he felt the pressure this year of being the NIL guy, the big transfer, the guy that got Tony in trouble, all the spotlight that was on him, and just pressing, trying to do too much. It's been hard for him to blend in and be one of the guys that, you know, I know we keep talking about last year's team and the team before that and the Gilbert Beck teams and all that stuff. But one of the advantages those guys had is they just sort of rose up from nothing, right? Nobody knew who they were. They were well known in baseball circles when they committed here, but it wasn't this rock star thing in Knoxville that Tennessee baseball has become. And they were just able to sort of happen organically. And it feels like these guys were plugged in and felt the pressure of, well, we've got to go out there and be Jordan Beck and Drew Gilbert. And that was never going to happen. Not a great recipe, I would say. But we'll see. You know, it was interesting when we were talking to Vitello on Wednesday. He said, that portal season has already begun. And he said it with kind of a note of disappointment and disgust, almost as if like, oh, I hate to say it, but portal season has started, and that's just part of it now. And we've heard rumblings that this kid from Charlotte who hits all the homers from Harden Valley could be looking at
coming home
to wear the big orange. Just a rumor at this point. But I'm sure we'll be plugging a couple of guys in the portal again this next off season.
That'd be cool.
I just hope we have better luck. Like, again, you know, Merritt is – I don't say he's been disappointing, but he's been a little disappointing.
Mm.
He has had a couple of walk-off home runs for us and everything, but I thought – first of all, I thought he was going to play left field. I thought he was going to be a plug-and-play guy in there every single day just mashing. I thought he was going to be fantastic. Reigning American Athletic Conference Player of the Year, hit whatever, 20 home runs last year at Cincy. Like, I thought he was going to be a superstar, and he hasn't been that. He's been a pretty good player.
Yeah, but in fairness to him, there's a huge difference between being the AAC Player of the Year and, I mean, basically stepping up into the MLB.
There's been a big difference between being the Big 12 Player of the Year, like Maui, and coming here. So, yeah, obviously coming from a Group of Five conference to the Power Five is a big step up. And
you're coming in the best conference in college baseball.
Well, I just hope that there are a lot of lessons for us as fans to learn as far as expectations, for Tony to learn as far as what he needs, and for the players themselves to learn. I mean, we're talking about Maui and – you know, oh, I got to step in and be Drew Gilbert on this team next year. It's like, no, you don't. You need to come in here and play a good shortstop and hit a little bit for us. And, hey, man, let's see what happens. That's what the approach should have been, instead of here's your big NIL deal, here's your commercial before you've even played a game here. And I hope they learn that lesson, and whoever they bring in next year out of the portal as a plug-and-play guy, that it's just like, all right, here's a guy. We're not going to put any expectations on him. We don't even know if he's going to start. But we're bringing him in, and we're going to coach him up and see if he can develop and help us win ball games. 865-546-8200. Your number to get on the drive this afternoon. All right. Lucas Panzeca.
Mm-hmm.
Coming up from Nashville. Here in just a mere matter of moments, we were having the conversation about best sports road trips yesterday.
Yeah.
I bet he's been to some pretty cool events.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if he's been to something.
Pretty sure he's been to several, like, Italian Serie A games.
Yeah, that's what I was getting ready to say. He's probably been to something that
– something in Brazil.
It wouldn't surprise me if he's seen something really, really cool in the world of football.
Did you see the video of – we always have. They take it so seriously over there. There was a match in Italy. We'll ask Lucas about this, but like the referee,
I think I heard
had a rough day.
Yeah,
and Mourinho is like, you know, a big. He's one of the big managers in world football. Like, confronted the ref, cussed him out in the tunnel after the game, in the parking lot after the game. They had footage of this poor ref coming back.
Right.
He's like in the airport with his wife, and there is a mob of people physically attacking him, throwing stuff at him, drinks at his wife and stuff. Like, it was scary.
Really?
It was scary. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was,
you know, Jeffrey Macias should look at
got
that.
Got off light.
Yeah, because he was feeling intruded upon by it was little Heidi from Twitter. Who's a Tennessee and a K-State fan.
I don't want to be condescended to anymore by Greg Sankey about how Tennessee fans need to take it easy on Mark Curless.
Yeah.
Stop throwing golf balls and stuff. We're not showing up at the airport.
Throwing drinks on his old lady.
Breaking out the guillotine.
Yeah. When do we see Chase Burns this weekend? They flashed him up on the screen.
You said it like that, like you're angry at him or something.
Nah. Just
When do we see Chase Burns this weekend? That guy.
I'm ready to see him throw. I'm ready to see some magic. The Magic Man.
You're going to see him ear hole somebody again?
Oh, God. Honestly, yeah. Honest Friday for me. Yeah. I don't want anybody to get hurt or any brain
Set
damage.
Set the tone, Chase.
But just the sound that thing makes when it careens off.
Doink!
And the whole crowd goes quiet.
As the batter lies lifeless motionless and limp on the ground, and we wonder whether or not he's actually still alive. That's what you want to see?
No.
I like how you transitioned from attacking the ref to harvesting the ACL. So in the same segment right there. That was
brings out a lot of the same emotions.
Stay with us. The drive continues. More Fan Run Radio coming up. Clemson has broken this one wide open in the bottom of the ninth. They hit a grand slam. It's 12-5.
Bottom of the eighth.
As they close out Lipscomb, and they will advance to meet the winner of Tennessee and Charlotte tomorrow over there at Clemson. Russ LeBaire back with you. Marcus Young cruising with us. Young Tucker Harlan hanging out in the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios as well. And we welcome in our old friend Lucas Widespread Panzeca of 104.5 The Zone and Titans Radio in Nashville, a proud graduate of the Fan Run Academy of Broadcasting. Good afternoon, LP. How are you, sir?
Afternoon, guys. I'm doing well. I thought it would have been cool to have a Lipscomb versus Tennessee regional final in Clemson.
I mean, Lipscomb gave them a ride there for a minute. I mean, they put the fear of God into Clemson today.
They did.
So, we'll see. Any thoughts on – I know Titans Nation is preoccupied with dissecting Will Levis's every move right now, but does the Tennessee baseball NCAA tournament fixture register on the Nashville sports meter at all this afternoon, Lucas?
Yeah, I think it definitely does. I think it'll be interesting given how they kind of flamed out in the SEC tournament. We were talking to Mike Wilson today from Knoxville News on the show, and he was talking about the coaching job that Tony's done this year and kind of lauding all the moving parts and still kind of being able to push them over a good run in the back half of the season. So I think there will definitely be a lot of disappointment around here if they can't get out of Clemson.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a long up-and-down year for this baseball team, but you get into these win-or-go-home situations, it's survive in advance, all those great sports cliches, LP, but what are your thoughts on this one? Do you think Tennessee will still be playing when we reconvene on sports radio Monday?
I'm going to say yes. When's the final? Sunday? Sunday night?
Well, they could play Monday. I think you can lock it up Sunday. Tennessee has the past couple of years, but it can go as late as Monday.
Yeah, if they can just find some clutch hit, does it feel like that's been the biggest missing piece, just clutch hitting in the right moments, right? I mean, that was definitely missing in that Texas A&M game in Hoover, but I mean, it feels to me like the pitching's been there for the majority of the year, and with you guys being much closer to it on a week-to-week basis, has that kind of been the missing ingredient consistently this year?
Maybe. I mean, to me, it just seems like, you know, Fulmer used to always tell the story about the boy plugging holes in the dam, and every time he'd plug one hole, water'd spring out another one. Like, yeah, we've had some bad hitting, the last time we saw these guys, they didn't hit at all in the SEC tournament. But then there have been games where the starting pitcher gets shelled, and the recurring theme to me is, like, bad defense. It's just booted balls and errors and stuff like that. So, I mean,
our infield defense is shaky at best some days.
And it feels like a lot's always made at the ballpark whenever Tennessee's playing, just for how successful they are in Lindsey Nelson Stadium. I remember that being a huge storyline in Omaha a couple of years ago. And, from what I see, the Clemson's ballpark kind of plays into that, or it should play into Tennessee's favor, right?
Yeah, it's
smaller dimensions.
Yeah, it's very similar to Lindsey Nelson.
Maybe the ball will be flying out of there this afternoon. It's a final now. Clemson has defeated Lipscomb to advance, so they'll clear the field, and we got about an hour and a half until Tony V and the boys take to it this afternoon. Lucas Panzeca with us on the Big Orange Phillies phone lines. And Lucas, we had a great conversation yesterday on the show about greatest sports road trips. It's June, Lucas. We're breaking out the summer sports radio topics. You know what I'm talking about. You're a great person to ask about this. I know you're well-traveled. Great sports road trips that Lucas Panzeca has been on.
Football-wise, it's got to be Green Bay. That was the one. Ooh. One place that that was a work thing. That wasn't just a fun weekend road trip, but still walking into Lambeau, driving up to Lambeau. Everybody talks about how Wrigley Field in Chicago is like in the middle of a neighborhood, right? And there's just houses everywhere. But I guess I didn't know that Lambeau was the exact same. You're just driving through a regular old suburban neighborhood and you turn a corner and there's Lambeau Field. It's right there. And also the great thing about it is whenever you're in Green Bay, it's very flat, Green Bay, Wisconsin. So just you can be on the total other side of town and you'll just look up and there's the big G just looming in the distance. It's the way it just hovers over that town. And walking into that place, man, just what a cathedral. I got to go Lambeau Field if it's going to, if it comes to work. Overall, I mean, I don't know how many people will appreciate this, but either going to the Milan Derby, Inter and AC Milan, when I was a senior in high school, or a year ago last summer in Rio, getting to see Flamengo and Fluminense in the Maracanã Stadium, which is just one of an end-all, be-all, historic soccer stadium in history in Rio with a massive rivalry and a derby of its own. So, yeah, those got to be easily my top three.
That's pretty good. Did you see my guy Mourinho after the game the other day giving known dullard Anthony Taylor an earful? And then what happened to Anthony? Did you see the video of Anthony Taylor being accosted in the airport?
I did. Yeah, I did. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Jose was waiting for him. He kind of cornering him. Yeah, that's classic.
No, but
Jose.
Did you see there's that one where they're in the bowels of the stadium. There was one yesterday of Anthony Taylor and his wife getting – they're at an airport, and they're like all these rowdy – I think it's in Italy somewhere. All these fans are throwing drinks at them and stuff. It was awful.
Yeah, no, it was in Budapest. Yeah, it was in Budapest, which I believe is where the game happened. Yeah,
that's a
nasty scene there. There's an ugly side to the passion of European soccer.
Oh, that's right. It was the Europa League. So they're
Europa
in,
League, right.
in Budapest, and a bunch of Roma fans cornered them or something there.
Well, there was Roma fans are known for. I don't know if you remember this. It went viral. It was years ago, but just a photo of everything that was confiscated from the Roma-Lazio game, which is the big rivalry, two clubs in Rome. And it was just a photo of everything that was confiscated going into the stadium and just laid out on a table. Like, you're talking about, like, shivs and, like,
makeshift axes. Like one of those prison thing where the prison documentary where the warden shows you, oh, this is what we came in our cell block check. This is what we found.
like a 2x4 with a metal plate that's been like manually sharpened, just duct taped. Yes, exactly.
Somebody had a trident at the game.
Yeah.
Wow. Lucas Pancico, 104.5 The Zone, Titans Radio with us this afternoon. All right, Lucas, so we've gotten your favorite sports road trips out of the way this afternoon. Let's talk about the Titans and OTAs going on this week. I mentioned people are just, poor Levis, man. He has like one bad throw over the whatever you call that thing, the net with the three slots in it, and people are just like dissecting it. Is this what's going on the Zone right now? Or are people taking more of a big picture view? How has OTAs been received so far?
Yeah, there hasn't been as much of that as you would think, just the dissection of every throw and every drill. I think the main thing that people are seeing is that Ryan Tannehill is far and away the best quarterback on this roster right now, and that should not be a surprise. If you are surprised by that, then that's your own fault, because Ryan Tannehill has been in this league for over a decade. Malik Willis and Will Levis have been in this league for 5 minutes. So I think that's pretty much, I think they didn't have any of those wow moments. Maybe what you saw in the footage from OTAs the other day, I don't think inspired people, but I also think people are being somewhat mature about not taking away just an insane amount from these OTAs. But there's no doubt Levis struggled with some inaccuracy. Malik Willis, the same thing. But these guys are going to have some bad days. Obviously, that's one of the knocks on Levis, accuracy, decision-making coming out. So it stands to reason that there's going to be a lot of that early on. But these guys aren't even wearing pads. I think we'll start to have deeper conversations around this when we get to training camp and we get to sit there and watch team drills in person with shoulder pads and helmets and and 11-on-11, especially in these joint practices, which the Titans will get two of this year, that I think could be very valuable for a guy like Will Levis when they will have joint practice with Minnesota in Minnesota, and then they will host New England the final preseason game of the year, and they'll have New England in town all week long. So that's where we can really start to put together some takeaways. But for right now, we're talking about the first couple of weeks that these guys are on a practice field, and there's more of a focus on Charles London, the quarterback's coach, and his approach to developing young quarterbacks than there is on the mistakes they're making right now, because I think even the most rational Titans fans understand that a rookie quarterback in OTAs is going to be making mistakes, and every day is not going to be perfect.
So I guess my question with the Titans, my big question this offseason, Lucas, is are the Titans truly committed to turning it back to 2021? Last year was an aberration. We had a lot of injuries. We are going forward, trying to win this division, get back in the playoffs, and chase a Super Bowl. Or is it more last year was not an aberration, we got some issues, and even though we're not saying it publicly, we are in the rebuilding process?
That is the million-dollar question. That seems to be what nobody can really figure out right now. Is it more of a retool / rebuild? Are they trying to,
we just don't know.
We have no idea. We have no idea. I mean, Ryan Tannehill's the starting quarterback for this team, so I think that's one step towards, one step away from the total tear it down rebuild thing, which we kind of already knew that Mike Vrabel is never going to sign up for something like that, I don't think. But my personal belief is that this team is going to try to be as competitive as it possibly can this year and then just try to take steps towards the future. And that future, a year from now, probably looks like a team without Ryan Tannehill and Derrick Henry on it, as those guys obviously are going into the final year of their contract. So I think this team is pushing to be as competitive as possible this year. I think a lot of people would point to the wide receiver room and say, okay, I don't know how you do that with that in that room. We'll see what they do in that sense, if they add to that room going into training camp. But obviously they rebuilt the offensive line. That was without a doubt a rebuild. There's a lot of confidence in this defense and the defensive line, the front seven group, and Ryan Tannehill is going to be your guy. And if he can stay upright, then the offense is going to be focused around Derrick Henry and the play action passing game. The most interesting thing about this offseason has been everything that we've heard, particularly from players on the offense under new offensive coordinator Tim Kelly. And the common thread here has been tempo. Tempo, tempo, tempo. Chigakonkwo has talked about it. Treylon Burks even brought up his Kendall Briles offense at Arkansas, that it kind of reminds him of that. So that is the biggest thing that we are interested in as a talking point right now, is just how different is this offense going to look? That's not exactly something the Titans have done in the Vrabel era.
Lucas Panzeca, 104.5 The Zone, Titans Radio Network, with us this afternoon on the show. All right, Lucas, we have had a heated debate, at times bordering on too heated this week. We've been talking action movies, action stars. Do you have a favorite action star when you think of, man, I just want to chill out tonight and watch a movie with big explosions, lots of bad guys getting killed? What's your go-to right now?
I think it's Keanu Reeves. I think it's Keanu Reeves.
And
it's,
are you trolling me right now? Did Bear set you up on this?
I know Bear brought this up to me. Bear brought this up to me.
I promise you
I would be saying Keanu anyway. But what Bear brought up to me was the debate between Liam Neeson and Keanu Reeves. And I love Liam Neeson, and he has his place. But I got to go Keanu and the different eras of Keanu, from whether it's Point Break or Speed, which is a movie that I feel like I've seen 20 to 30 times. And then this most recent iteration of Keanu with John Wick, I have just absolutely loved. I mean, honestly, the Matrix movies are kind of, a little further down for me.
Really?
I don't rank
the
Matrix movies as high as the Point Breaks or the Speeds or the John Wicks or even the Constantines. I don't know what it is about Keanu.
Constantine over the Matrix? What are you doing?
Great bad movie, Constantine.
He's telling the truth. Please quit interrupting our guest. Go ahead, Lucas.
Constantine? Who saw
Constantine?
Mr. Panzeca. Who saw that?
I did.
There are, there are bad movies and there are good bad movies. I put Constantine under the good bad movie category.
Like King Ralph.
Good. No, that's a bad movie. A good bad movie would be Con Air.
That's a great
bad movie. Face Off with Nicolas Cage and John Travolta also. Have you guys seen Face Off? Am I the only one who's seen the classic mid-90s Face Off?
Yeah, not me.
You haven't seen Face Off with Travolta and Cage? Neither of you? You haven't, Bear?
No.
Oh, my God. It's an outrage. You guys got to drop what you're doing right now and go watch. Yes,
I'm
Marcus.
I'm looking it up. It's got, 7.3 on IMDb, 92% on Rotten Tomatoes. Oh, I don't know.
Castor Troy, one of the great villains of 90s movies all time. I want to take his face off.
70 to 75% of Nicolas Cage movies are good to bad movies. Like, it's kind
That's
of
true.
That, it's got that kind of Constantine feel. You don't know if you're going to walk into it and feel like you've just wasted money or if you just come out of, like, the cave with Aaron Rodgers and, like, don't know what.
I'll go ahead and tell you. I've never seen a bad Nicolas Cage movie. I think Nicolas Cage is much like the old adage about pizza.
It's still bad. It's still pretty good.
Yeah.
Okay.
No Nicolas Cage slander.
We'll put the poll in the field. Is there such thing as a bad Nicolas Cage movie? I feel like there's.
I think
some
not. What do you think, Lucas?
I'd have to go through his catalog, but I do think Nicolas Cage is kind of the Nickelback of Hollywood A-listers.
How dare
like
you
where it's just become, it, for some reason it's become so fun and cool to make fun of him, but maybe it's just because he seems to accept every single project that comes his way, that it's just been his mission to be in every movie ever created.
The Nicolas back, if you will. Five married five times. He's on wife number five right now.
I did not know. I learned very recently that he was born into the Coppola family.
Yeah.
That I had no idea.
You had no idea that he was a Coppola?
No, I had no idea.
Changed his name so that I admire that. He changed his name so that he could carve his own. But now I'm sure he's still benefited greatly from his lineage, but wanted to make his own name.
Yes, his aunt is – she did the same thing, though. Talia Shire. She was in Rocky. Played Adrian.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I'm learning a lot here. He also was married. I know he was married to Lisa Presley, rest in peace, at one point. I don't know if y'all saw the one of the more recent ones he did where he plays himself with Pedro Pascal, the Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent.
So good.
That was good.
That did look really good. I need to see
I've just seen the GIF on Twitter of is that from the movie where Pedro Pascal is smiling at him real crazy?
Yeah. Smiling at him, yes. That is the part when they're tripping acid in the movie. Yeah, it's a good movie.
Oh, you had Barrett tripping acid. It moves right to the top.
I was just
going to
say, that look he's got, I've seen that look before. It's a Fan Run Functions.
All right. Well, I think we've all got some homework assignments now from Constantine to Face Off. I can't believe you guys haven't seen that. What did we just talk about? The unbearable likeness
the unbearable weight of massive talent.
Unbearable weight of massive talent. All right, making a note here. We got some weekend film assignments. Lucas, we appreciate you, my friend. Have a great weekend. Anything else you care to add to the conversation/festivities on your way out the door?
Well, I guess I am curious real quick on what the conversation has been with you guys on the SEC meetings this week. I mean, to be honest, we've talked about that more today than we have OTAs. I mean, that totally dominated the conversation.
No, I had that in my notes. I meant to ask you about that as well. It's it's interesting to me that I just sort of assumed that they would find a way to 9. And I still think they will find a way to 9. It's bizarre to me, Lucas, that they've known Texas and A&M were coming in. The public has known that Texas A&M were on their way for 2 years. I'm sure the SEC people knew for longer than that. And 2 years is not long enough to get your ducks in a row. Maybe this is going to be a little bit messier than we thought.
Yeah, they keep kicking the can. It feels like an inevitable result that's just going to take forever to land the plane.
Well, as a Tennessee grad yourself and lots of Tennessee fans in the mid-state, I mean, what are your thoughts on permanent opponents? Are there rivalries that, in your opinion, are sacred, must be preserved, or are you ready to say, look,
It's 16 teams in a league that used to be 10. There's not room to cling to some of these traditions. We've got to let some of this stuff go.
Yeah, and I understand that, and that's fine. And Tennessee, I imagine, would get saddled with in a 9-game format. Vanderbilt, Alabama, and then I don't know who that third team would be. But, I can reconcile with the fact that you're no longer playing. You're probably no longer going to play Kentucky and Florida every year, and Georgia. I can live with that. But it's to just to maximize how much you can preserve. And in that 8-game format, I have a hard time with Tennessee's only permanent opponent every year being Vanderbilt. And I am tired of being met with, but you still, it's not a big deal. You still get to play them every other year. I understand the Alabama game has caused people a lot of pain over the years, myself included. But I don't know. I'm not that okay with only hosting Alabama every 4 years, right, and playing them every other year. Like, I want a little bit more juice to that in my year-to-year schedule. I love the idea of playing opponents that you haven't typically gotten to see with the division format more often. But, yeah, the SEC means more. So, right, if they say it just means more, but does it not mean more games? So to me, it's also a perception thing. It's a bad look to play scared, so to speak, and add to the conference with 16 teams only playing 8 regular season games makes no sense to me. But I am intrigued by that 2024 schedule with the idea of 1 permanent opponent, 3 all being out the window. They're just going to draw up a schedule, and whoever you get, you get. I am fascinated to see what Tennessee's schedule looks like for 24.
Lucas, are you buying into the national narrative that the SEC teams are scared to play?
When Nick Saban turns around after banging his fist about more conference games and suddenly steps over to the side of 8 because, I don't know how you guys came up with Auburn, LSU, and Tennessee for us to play every year. I can tell you how you came up with that. Auburn, the Iron Bowl, Tennessee, the third Saturday in October, and Alabama, LSU has been one of the best rivalries in SEC play for the last decade plus. So, yeah, I mean, what else am I to do with that right now? When I understand that what the money has to do with it, and the idea of ESPN paying up a little bit more for the 9 games, I totally get that. But I don't think I can reconcile with not stepping up to 9 if the motivation behind that is being worried about your playoff resume or bowl eligibility, which to me is an absolute joke.
I just don't want to hear any more about how we got to pave the way for Tennessee to play UTC or Mercer or ETSU or get these games off the schedule, Lucas. Nobody wants to see these.
Yes.
Can we all agree on that at least?
Yeah.
Yes. Alabama's playing MTSU, USF, and UTC this year. So, God forbid we replace one of those with an extra SEC game.
All right. Good place to end it. Lucas, appreciate it, my friend. Have a great weekend.
All right, guys. Appreciate it. See y'all.
At Lucas Panzeca on the Twitter machine. He's with 104.5 The Zone and the Titans Radio Network. And that is a pretty cool one, man. That's a go up to Lambeau with the Titans Radio crew. Not going to lie, I'm a little jelly.
He's worked really hard for it. So, and he's super
talking about it. I remember what he used to wait in the car. Eating those cookies that I bought from the CVS.
Oh, God, those things were horrible.
Worst cookies in the...
Did they even have sugar in them?
Just chowed down on them, man. Just demolished them. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, wadded up the bag and threw it vaguely in the direction of the trash can here at Fan Run.
Stay with us. The drive continues. It's Fan Run Radio. We're back with more right after this. Fan Run Radio, the drive continues. 105.7 FM, 1340 AM, streaming online this afternoon at fanrunradio.com and your free Fan Run app, a variety of ways for you to experience the program. Lucas Panzeca, Bear, what did you learn?
I was kind of surprised that the SEC, I guess I should and I shouldn't be, but that SEC Media Days had overtaken Titans talk down there in his neck of the woods. Like anytime because I go to Nashville frequently for the past few years, and I listen to the radio a lot, listen when I'm down there to the shows down there on the radio, and it's a lot of Titans, and it jumps out at me because I feel like we're slanted the other way, obviously, with Tennessee. So
a lot of SEC
fans in there. The footprint is big, and I mean, let's be honest. How much can you really talk about OTAs?
And not much, because you can't take anything away. Even though I'm not going to call anybody out, some people, you know, online, possibly in this room, are looking at yesterday's 30-second video as being, what would you call it?
Do we even want to hear from Marcus on
that video?
Anything Titans right now? Should we give him 60 seconds or should we just move?
Let's give him 60 seconds. Hold on, Marcus. Time starts now.
I think that those people who are saying, oh, you guys are overreacting because he threw one bad pass, are the exact same people who are overreacting that said, did you see that throw that he made on his first training camp day? It's insane. Get a grip. It's like Lucas said, it's OTAs. He's going to have good days and bad days. And until he gets his brains blown up by real NFL players, we're not going to see how bad he truly is. Period.
I love it. Much like a Phil call, I had a lot of hope there. I was like, you know what, man? I was thinking, he's being pretty positive. What was that last line of yours? Until we find out how bad he really is.
Until he gets out in the field and gets his brains blown in by real NFL players, we won't see how bad he really is.
Isn't that brains blown out?
How bad he really is.
It's going to get suctioned in by all the weight of the 300-plus pound D linemen.
That's it.
Sitting on top of
him. 1 minute.
Yep, you're done. Sorry, bud.
Technically, you guys took some of my time, but that's, you know, here
we reserve
there.
The right to do that.
865-546-8200. A controversial poll is in the field right now, ladies and gentlemen. Is there such thing as a bad Nicolas Cage movie?
I mean, he's been in some of my all-time favorite. One of the all-time, and I mean all-time funniest movies I've ever seen in my life.
55.1% of the audience says no.
Certainly not.
Raising Arizona.
44.9% says yes. I would agree. Raising Arizona is
fantastic.
It's fantastic, and probably I would say the greatest Nicolas Cage role.
It's a master. His whole rant when he's talking to Ed when they're doing the mugshot.
H.I. McDonough.
Have you seen
You tell him you can find me, Ed. Route something.
It's been a while since I've seen it. I have to go. We need to
do some rewatches on some
John
stuff
Goodman
this summer.
And his partner in
when
that.
They start screaming when they
they left the baby on the boy. You got a panty on your head.
He's got some incredible movies.
I can't believe you guys haven't seen Face Off.
I have.
You've seen Face Off.
Oh, I've seen most of his movies.
Face Off is a legitimately
good that's just
movie.
One that.
You know what I'm talking about?
It's just everybody's got movies. Hell, like Rick. Like, he didn't have anything against the party. He just hadn't watched it. That was hysterical last night as Rick Butler was tweeting me and Russ, who have both not only seen The Departed, know every scene, and Rick's texting us as he's watching the movie. And there's like one point where his mind's blown and he's not even halfway into the movie. And I texted Russ in a second. I was like, wait till he sees this.
Yeah, that was fun. Rick Butler has finally seen The Departed. He has an excuse. I mean, he's younger. Like, the Face-Off is one of those movies that's on quite a bit, too. Like, you can just.
Yeah, I don't know why. It's just something.
Great prison scene in Face-Off. You have high tech. You have shootouts. One of Travolta's best roles.
So what's Cage's character? Is he the bad guy originally before they start swapping around?
He plays Castor Troy.
And who is John Travolta's character?
John Travolta, he's like a cop. He's an FBI guy or something.
That's some old man called him, sorry.
Yeah.
John Travolta.
I don't remember why. I need to go back and watch this again. But there's a new experimental procedure. He's going to go into prison to find.
There's supposed to be, I think, like a couple bombs going off.
Yeah, and he's going to go into prison as Castor Troy, Nicolas Cage.
Okay, we can stop there. Uh-huh. That's about a trailer. You've kind of set it up for me.
No more spoilers?
No. Okay. Yeah. Because this is one where
you'll love it. Oh, it's great.
Yeah, I mean, I love Nicolas Cage.
That's pretty much the whole movie.
Also, National Treasure.
All right. I'll still watch it. National Treasure, incredible.
Never seen it.
Gonna steal the Declaration of Independence.
Never seen it. Is it good? People say it's good.
First one's fantastic.
Yeah. Oh, he was Stanley Goodspeed.
Is that the one where he goes,
yeah,
well, let's go?
Yeah. No,
that's a
losers
else.
Try their best.
That's The Rock.
That's The Rock. Yeah,
yeah, I know. He played in that Stanley Goodspeed, Dr. Stanley Goodspeed in The Rock. He was in, oh, God. It was heartbreaking. I put it up there with My Girl.
Ghost Rider?
No.
Leaving Las Vegas.
Did you see his face? He's like, yeah, Ghost Rider, right? No, Leaving Las Vegas.
That's a good one, too.
Leave the Shoe, Russ.
Yeah. Big crush on him. Yeah.
Everybody did. John Stewart did. Have you ever seen that where he talks about it? Like when he interviewed her on one of his shows. It may have been the one he started on MTV, and she flirted with him for like 30, I mean, hard flirted with him for like 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks about it. Like he fell in love with her.
You know what's ironic about that is in that movie, she was a hooah.
Ralph Cifaretto.
But she was a pretty woman of the night. Like there was something attractive and like
a pretty woman.
Yeah, she was very attractive for like usually
she still is.
Usually that's a big turnoff. I don't know about you guys, but women who give it up for money, not my kind of thing.
You're awfully judgmental, Marcus.
Okay, all right.
Have you seen The Boys?
Yeah.
Her role in that is about as weird as weird
it
gets.
It took me way too long to realize who she was. Because I saw The Boys, and I was like, she is so familiar. And completely forgot her being in Leaving Las Vegas and Karate Kid.
She still got it, though.
Oh, of course she does.
But that role is weird as hell. We'll have to tell Russell. We can't even talk about it on air.
You need to watch The Boys.
I've heard it's pretty good.
Oh, yeah. That's killer. I'm getting ready to start. You ought to start it. We need to come with our watch and rewatch list for the summer, Russ. It's getting to be about that time.
865-546-8200, your number to get on the phone with us this afternoon. Let's get a call from Chris. Good afternoon, Chris. You're on the drive.
Oh, yeah. Face Off's a great movie.
Classic.
Con Air, Face Off. Of course, to me, The Rock is the best movie he's been in. That's just incredible.
Man, the 90s were spitting out some banger action movies there in the mid-90s.
Hey Chris, give it to us, Russ. You're Con Air.
Put the bunny in the box.
That's one of your better
impressions. That's a great movie. Benjamin Gates and National Treasure. Those are two great movies.
He's incredible.
Especially the first one.
You learn so much about American history, too, don't you, Chris?
Cameron Poe just wanted to get back to his daughter.
Oh, there you go. Gone in 60 Seconds.
That was a good one. Eleanor. Yeah.
Next is a good one, too.
I haven't seen that.
Yeah, so many great movies. But you were talking about road trips yesterday. I couldn't call in. But back in my younger days, this shows my age, we did the Cardinals, the Cubs, the Brewers, and the Reds all in four straight days.
Damn.
It was Andrew Jones' rookie year for the Braves. It just shows how old I am.
96.
Yep. So we were actually in the bleacher. We were actually in the bleachers back when the bleachers were affordable.
Would that be Old Busch Stadium?
No, at Wrigley.
No, I'm talking about when you went to St. Louis. Did you go to a game?
Oh, yeah, that was the Old Busch Stadium. Yeah. When we saw the Cubs, the Braves were actually playing at Wrigley. So we sat in the bleachers but it just shows my age. And back when the bleachers were affordable, now
affordable, yes.
That's the most expensive ticket there. But so obviously that was a fun trip. But the coolest thing I've ever been to was back in 2010. My wife and I went to Europe for about 3 weeks. In London, I went to Wimbledon, not the tournament, but just
soccer
to
team.
The grounds.
Oh, and just into the ground. Oh, that's good. Yeah.
Yeah, the Wimbledon tennis facility, and it's kind of like Wrigley. It's just in the neighborhood. You're just walking around a corner, and it's right there.
Could you like go inside and everything and see like center court?
Yeah, I walked inside and went in the pro shop. They had a tour, but it was going to be like $40. I didn't want to pay that. I just wanted to walk around the grounds for a few minutes and get a few pictures. And
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy.
Get back
sounds.
On the tube to head back into downtown London.
This is the most, believe it or not, I'm kind of jealous that, kind of jealous of you. That's one place, like, I would love to go and tour it, Wimbledon.
That would be fun.
Yeah, it was cool. I didn't want to pay the money to, you know, be on like a 45-minute guided tour. I mean, like, you know, it's a tennis court. But, you know, it was just kind of cool walking around and,
It's a playground of the immortals.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like Wrigley and Lambeau. I mean, literally, it's in the middle of a neighborhood. You turn a corner, and there is Wimbledon.
That's cool. Put that on my to-do list. Good stuff, Chris. Anything else?
No, that's it. Go Vols. We got to win tonight. See you.
All right, man. Appreciate you. Stay with us. Marcus has you top five at five when we continue. An hour till first pitch. More Fan Run Radio coming up.